Today on the show, we'll talk Razorback softball. They're in Oklahoma City tonight for the start of the Women's College World Series. Also, Razorback baseball as they get closer to playing Kansas. We'll have Patrick Ebert on from D1 Baseball with us a little bit later. I want to tell you our podcast brought to you by Eglin's Best. When it comes to your game day, you want the best in your lineup. That includes your eggs. Eglin's Best delivers more of the nutrition you need with 6 times more vitamin D and 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. You can score now with Eglin's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. Visit eglinsbest.com for more information. Also brought to you by Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, you can look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Ethan Westerman is in Oklahoma City where the Razorbacks will play Nebraska first. Ethan, what's the feeling around the program as this game gets close?
Yeah, you know, I think that anybody who's watched them all year long knows that they deserve to be here. Just they've been one of the best teams consistent throughout the year. But, you know, and it's a different thing to know you're good enough to be here and then to come here and actually compete. And I think that's what we're all curious to see is just, well, what they did in the regular season carry over to here in Oklahoma City, because if they play their brand of softball, they really can beat anybody here, I think. It's just a matter of it's a big setting here. I mean, it's a 13,000 seat stadium. That's way bigger than any you're going to play on in the regular season. It's just, you wonder how ready they'll be for this moment. I know that it was obviously a big moment for them to punch their first ticket here on Saturday. And rightfully so, they deserve to celebrate that as much as they did. But it did seem, whenever we talked to Courtney Dyfel on Tuesday, like they did a pretty good job of, you know, once Sunday rolled around, getting into prep mode. So they open with Nebraska. That's a big time game to get it started. But, you know, when you get to this stage of the postseason, every game is going to be a big one. So might as well go ahead and jump right on in and play in, you know, a team that a lot of people think could compete for the title.
Yeah, and of course it's a team that they're playing in Nebraska that's got a pitcher, Jordy Fromm, who was named the USA Softball Collegiate Player of the Year yesterday. I mean, this is a really, really difficult challenge they've got going up against Fromm in game one.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, she's been one of the best players in the game, formerly Jordy Ball. People remember her when she was at Oklahoma. She's been at the stadium before. You know, that's kind of the talk around this matchup is these are two teams that really in recent history haven't been here, but each team has, you know, a couple players who have been here with other teams. Jordy was here with Oklahoma. She was the most outstanding player of the 2023 Women's College World Series. So she's been here and she's competed well here. And then Hannah Kaur, she transferred from Oklahoma. She plays for Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And then for Arkansas, Carly Davison, she came here as a freshman. That would have been 2023 as well. With Utah, with DJ Gasso. So there's a few players in this matchup that have been here before, but for the most part, these are two teams that have wanted to make it here and they finally have, but it's a tough challenge right off the bat. This Nebraska team that has won 26 in a row coming into it. So pretty impressive.
A lot of transfers at Nebraska, and that includes, they got a few players from Arkansas, right?
Yeah, they do. They have Hannah and Lauren Kamenzin, they came here together as part of that 2023 freshman class that also includes Reagan Johnson, Natalia Riho, Robin Heron. They were here with those players and then transferred after their sophomore season. They're from Nebraska. Mm-hmm. There was this big kind of shift after Jordy left OU to go to Nebraska, because her whole reasoning for wanting to do that was just to go home and try and grow softball in that state and with that program. And it kind of led to this movement where a lot of Nebraska players did the same thing. So Lauren and Hannah, after their sophomore season, also, I mean, you can never like speculate with why people transfer, but I just think that how they were being utilized at Arkansas maybe wasn't necessarily the same as they wanted, and they could see themselves having it in Nebraska. Like Hannah has been hitting in the lineup there all season. She's one of their best hitters. She at Arkansas, I feel like, was mostly just used as a pitcher. She's the true utility. And then Lauren's been at second base there. She at Arkansas was a catcher out of necessity her freshman year, and then played some shortstop her sophomore year. I just think that they might be in more comfortable roles, and they're playing in their home state. So I think that, you know, it's, you look at this matchup and you do have that familiarity. Casey Hoffman's another one. She's in right field. And she was on that Arkansas team in 2022 that beat Texas in game one of the Super and ended up getting, you know, denied of the World Series by losing two in a row. Sorry, by the way, I am definitely in Oklahoma right now. I'm sitting in a radio booth up here and the rain just started absolutely beating down. I mean, like, these poor Tennessee girls out here on the field practicing got pelted by rain out of nowhere. So I'm if there's one thing I don't want to see while I'm here, it's a lot of these happen in the middle of game times that cause delays, especially with Arkansas already being slotted as the late game. Mm-hmm. Rain delays will be my enemy this week.
You could have some late nights. You told me that it was raining earlier. I said, welcome to Oklahoma in May. I'm looking here at the forecast for the week. It's, it's kind of what it is there, about 20 to 40% chance of rain every day. Doesn't mean it's going to rain all day, but you could be dodging some storms here and there. Speaking of Oklahoma, I wonder what the feeling is over there with OU not being part of this field, because they have owned the World Series so much. Like, even last year, they didn't win it, but they got deep into, you know, I think they were a national semifinalist. The fact that they're there, to me, it makes this field feel very wide open. I wonder, being there, if that's the feeling there as well.
Yeah, certainly. And it also just makes, like, this is a big venue for softball, 13,000. And I think most people are just used to, if you get to play OU here, if you make it that far, or you got them in the first round, you're going to have 10,000 people cheering for them in the stands. Mm-hmm. And the other 3,000 are just kind of a hodgepodge of other teams' fans. You won't have that this year. It's funny because on the preview today, practices, they kind of coincide them like they do a regional or a super regional. It's funny because coaches were kind of taking turns vouching for why OU fans should choose them to come and support. Mm. Like Samantha Ricketts, who's the head coach at Mississippi State, she played at OU, and so that's an easy sell. Although they are the ones who beat OU and ended their season, but her and Patty Gasser are close. She was saying something like, can y'all just trade Crimson for Maroon some this week? Patrick Murphy was trying to sell why they should come cheer for Alabama. I really don't think OU fans are going to be thrilled to just come here and cheer for any team. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of just softball fans in this part of the United States. I mean, this is the same stadium that we'll see the Olympic Games played at here in a few years. There's a lot of people here in the heart of Oklahoma that just love to watch good softball. So it is funny to see the coaches kind of start to vouch for why OU fans should come and cheer for them. I mean, Courtney Dyfel could have a good case too, just as far as their them and OU have kind of had a little bit of a friendly in the past 2 years rivalry whenever they played in the regular season, just because those coaching staffs respect each other. Mm-hmm. And Patty's son DJ's on Arkansas staff, so but it does feel pretty wide open here. I don't think there's really a single team you look at in this field and you just can count them out. There's no real, like a few years ago whenever Duke came here for their first game ever in the World Series and they had OU right off the bat. Like, you knew how that was going to go. There's no real matchups like that this year.
Well, of course, Courtney Dyfel used to be an assistant coach at Oklahoma, so she has that tie with them too, or GA or volunteer assistant. Which one was it?
She was a GA. Okay. Yeah, it was her entry into coaching.
Yeah, but she was on the staff there, and she's got a tie to OU that way. You know, like, whenever baseball's in Omaha, the Nebraska fans, they kind of adopt a team or two, and you can tell who the favorite is. And Arkansas has always been a favorite in Nebraska because Dave Van Horn coached the Cornhuskers. And so when they go up there, there's a lot of friendliness from the Nebraska fans. You know, you'll get a Cinderella there every now and then. Like, I remember 14 years ago, Arkansas was up there with Stony Brook, and Stony Brook had beaten, I think, LSU in the Super Regional to get to Omaha. And so there was kind of like this, well, you know, are we Stony Brook or are we Arkansas? And they, you know, never ended up playing each other up there. But you get that a little bit in Omaha too. So it's not a surprise to hear that you see that in Oklahoma City as well. As far as, I want to go back real quick to last Saturday, because we haven't had a chance to talk about this on the show yet, about what that was like at Bogle. I was watching that from the Hoover Met. You know, everybody's seen the video of the baseball players watching it down in the clubhouse. We were watching it. I was sitting with Phil Elson and Bubba Carpenter, and we were all watching it kind of in this media dining area there in the stadium as the rain was falling around us. And I don't know, it was just such a neat event watching it on TV. And I have to believe that if it was that cool watching it on television, that it had to be multiplied by many times being there in person.
Yeah, it was just one of those sports moments I don't think I'll forget covering it. It just, you could feel the emotion throughout the stadium, like immediately. The moment that Ella McDowell caught that foul pop, I just was like, a curse had been lifted or something off of the program, because, you know, they've been so close over and over. And I think what made it feel different too this time around is just how you could feel it, that they were going to win this year. I think there's always a little bit of nervousness going into a super regional, going into game one. And especially whenever you are down 3-2 and enter a rain delay that really could have been avoided. Had they just, you know, the logistics been a little bit better. But you know, there's a little bit of nervous energy, I think, around the ballpark, around, you know, that point of the series. But after Arkansas blew that first game open, and then they came out and Tiana Bell hit that home run, and then the second game to put them up, I think Duke got within 4-2 to make it a little bit interesting later. But, like, just eyeball test watching the game, you knew who was going to win the whole time. And I think that's what made the moment, like, I don't know. It's like, there was never really the tense moment of any of that super regional where you wonder how this is going to go. You knew it was going to be Arkansas, and it was just, I don't know, maybe a surreal moment for the staff, the fans, everybody who's been a part of making it grow, just to see Arkansas finally get over that hump. It was one of those few, like, I'd heard the term, like, it make my hair stand up on my arms, or what is the saying?
The hair on your neck stand up.
Whatever, yeah, that thing. And it was like, I actually felt that whenever it happened, just because of the pop in the stadium. It was like, you could just feel how much it meant to everybody there.
Arkansas scheduled to play Nebraska at 8:30 on Thursday night. But like Ethan said, if there's rain or even an extra inning game, you're one of those three games that precedes it. It could push it back a little bit. The schedule there is Texas Tech and Mississippi State. They are scheduled to play at 11 a.m. These are central times, by the way. Texas and Tennessee scheduled to play at 1:30. Then there's a night session. Alabama and UCLA scheduled to play at 6. Arkansas and Nebraska at 8:30. Arkansas is on the same side of the bracket with Alabama and UCLA, which means that they're going to play one of those two teams on the second day. So we'll see what happens, or in the second round. We'll see how that materializes, which team Arkansas is going to play there. You know, I wanted to go back to something you were talking about, kind of turning the page over last weekend after winning. I have always been of the belief that when a team gets to the World Series, whether it's baseball, softball, whatever, it's hard for them to win at the World Series. It just is. But then, you know, I look at Texas Tech last year. It was their first World Series appearance, and they get to the championship game. And I think maybe even beaten Texas one of those championship games. I think that went to a game three. So there is some recent precedent that it doesn't have to be that way. I wonder what you think the key is to being able to have success your first time when you go.
Yeah, well, in Arkansas's case, I really do think that it was such a big deal just to get over the hump of even getting here, that I almost think that by just escaping a super regional, there's a little bit of looseness about the team, just as far as, like, just got here and compete now. It's like, I think that you grow up and this is the stage that you want to play on, and you want it so bad that sometimes you press in super regionals and just, like, the big moments become too much. I just really feel like they're, now that they're here, it's almost like, all right, let's just go play ball. I think that for a lot of the teams here, it's kind of similar situation. It's Mississippi State's first year. Nebraska hasn't been in a while. Alabama missed out last year, and their roster is really made up of a lot of players who haven't been here as well. Tennessee's been here pretty much year in and year out. Texas and Texas Tech have that familiarity. They were here last year. And then UCLA is kind of an annual contender. But I just think there's a good mix of kind of, for Arkansas's case, they're not the only new kids on the block.
Yeah.
And then I think that helps out a little bit. And I also just think that probably a key is just remembering how many big venues you've played in before. And Arkansas's, I mean, the first thing I thought whenever I walked into Devon Park, it's a big stadium. It's way bigger than anything you're going to see on campus. But my first thought was, oh, you prepared them for this. Mm-hmm. I just kind of looked around and I was like, oh, you had all these bells and whistles. Like, it's This, of course, has some more stands, but this isn't, in my opinion, any bit more intimidating than going on the road to OU, where you know that the fans that will fill the stands are going to be cheering against you. I mean, I think that, you're just playing in a big stadium here when you're going to have a lot on your side.
This is where Courtney Dyfe goes out there like Norman Dale with the tape measure, right? It's this many feet to this, that many feet to that. It's just like anywhere else you've ever played before. Ethan, you do a great job. By the way, the schedule for the Razorbacks on game two, if they lose game one, they will play in an elimination game Friday night at 8:30, and if they win on Thursday, they will advance to play Saturday night at 6 o'clock against the winner of Alabama UCLA. So that's how that's going to go this week over in Oklahoma City. You can read all of Ethan Westerman's coverage at our website, wholehogsports.com. Ethan, enjoy yourself.
Thanks, Matt.
We're joined now by Patrick Ebert from D1 Baseball. He'll be in Lawrence this weekend for the Lawrence Regional. The Razorbacks are going to play Missouri State on Friday at 5 o'clock. That just got announced yesterday that that game's going to be on ESPNU now. It won't be on just ESPN Plus. It'll be on ESPNU. Kansas is going to play Northeastern in the first game at noon, and then of course we just have to see how the regional shakes out. Patrick, let's start with KU because we've seen Missouri State around here quite a bit. KU is really kind of the mystery team, I think, to a lot of people who are Razorback fans. They won the Big 12 regular season. They won the Big 12 tournament pretty convincingly. I mean, beat up on Oklahoma State and West Virginia. Couple of pretty hot teams. What do people need to know about Kansas? What makes them so good?
Well, I think first and foremost, you got to know about Fitzmagic. So their head coach, Dan Fitzgerald, I mean, they rally around him, and it kind of embodies what they're all about. Both not just this year, but last year as well. And bringing up what they did in the Big 12 conference tournament this time of year last year, it felt like they ran out of steam. And Coach Fitzgerald addressed that in the times that I've spoken with him this spring. And the team had a different focus. And this is a team that last year that it's completely overhauled almost. And no one hits the junior college ranks as hard as Coach Fitzgerald and his staff. They all have JUCO backgrounds, and pretty much the entire of their lineup, these guys were playing at junior colleges last year, and they come here. And the old kind of conventional wisdom was that it took 2 years for players to make that adjustment to Division One. But this coaching staff clearly knows what it takes to accelerate that 2 year path. So these guys are swinging it from day one. And you look at their top hitter, Tyson LeBlanc, and he's got 21 home runs, has the most big, the biggest ability to provide the big hit when the team needs it most. And last year he was at JUCO Power LSU Eunice. And now he's performing at such a high level in the Big 12 at the Division I level. So I think the biggest thing with Kansas is like, if you count them out, or if you try to play the game on paper, they're going to beat you. They're just relentless. They're going to keep coming at you, and they, more often than not, they find ways to win.
I don't know if he would have been Big 12 Player of the Year if Landon Hairston wasn't in the Big 12, but of course Hairston's having such a huge year at Arizona State. But you look at LeBlanc's numbers. I mean, these are really strong numbers: 339, 21 home runs, 11 doubles, 3 triples, 60 RBI. He seems to run the bases pretty well. He's got double-digit stolen bases, and it seems like he's a pretty good draft prospect too.
Yeah, definitely. And he's that has changed for him. And, when you perform at that level, you're going to get the attention of the scouts. And, he's a junior, so he's right at that age that makes him eligible for the draft. And like you said it, I mean, he's just an all-around shortstop prospect, plays pretty good defense too.
I was reading your preview on the regional today. You said you really like KU's bullpen. You think that might be something to watch in this regional?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, again, in speaking with Coach Fitzgerald, he really likes what he has and the different looks that he can throw at opposing teams. And, if he needs a guy that, if one of his starters has a rough outing and he needs a guy to bridge that gap, he's got Cannon Carr. And if he needs like one or two outs against right or left-handed hitters, he's got a changeup specialist and Carter Fink. And it just goes on and on. Excuse me, from there, Ryan Ritter's able to provide long innings out of the bullpen. Toby Scheit has been one of their best relievers all season long. And Manning West, for years now, he's the one guy that's the returning member of this pitching staff that's been reliable all the way through. So a lot of different guys that can go that can get you, bridge that gap between the starters and their closer, Bodie Rahe, from who leads the team with 9 saves.
Hoagland Ballpark, how does it play? I mean, I look at the dimensions. It looks a little bit like Baum Walker Stadium, 320 down the lines, 375 to the alleys, and 400 to center. But I mean, is it a ballpark that's offensive friendly?
It is definitely a ballpark that's offensive friendly. And when you look at the 4 teams participating in this regional, like, it's hard not to imagine a couple of these games turning into a slugfest. And I know you remember the, what was it, 2022 Stillwater regional. Yeah. Well,
I forget.
And, you know, Missouri State was there as well. And that's the number 3 seed of the Lawrence regional here. So we could see similar conditions for this one.
Well, hopefully we don't see, what was it, like 60 home runs, 70? I forget. It was an insane number of home runs that we saw over there in Stillwater that weekend.
My neck still hurts from that, yes.
Yeah. Looking to see if it went over the fence that time. You know, for KU, I mean, how big of a deal do you think this is that they're hosting a regional? You look at the tickets went on sale, and they were basically sold out before they went on sale. It's a small ballpark, only about 2,500 seats. I know they're trying to do some things to add some more seats in this, but it seems like this is one of those really pivotal moments for this program.
Absolutely. Definitely. Like, this is, you know, what they've been building for. You know, I've mentioned Coach Fitzgerald's name several times already, and I'll mention it again. This is what he was brought in to do, you know, and he stated that, and he's accomplished that now. And now it's the next step, right? Like, you get to host a regional and you want to advance to the super regional. You want to get to the College World Series in Omaha. And that's what, you know, that's what this program's goal is. And they're very serious about it. This isn't just some flash in the pan. I mentioned last season's success. Mm-hmm. You know, they had a very good season a year ago. And to be perfectly honest, coming into this year, it was kind of hard to imagine them being able to replicate that. And not only have they replicated that, but they've surpassed that. And, you know, you mentioned the capacity of the ballpark. They're adding another 1,500 standing room only seats past the left field wall. So they're doing whatever it takes to get as many fans in there as possible, because they clearly have showed up.
I think I read where they're even going to let people stand inside Allen Fieldhouse, the basketball arena, and which kind of looks down into the ballpark, and watch from like an area, an observation area inside the basketball arena. They're really having to get creative. I heard Mike Rooney earlier this week say something along the lines of first-time regional hosts seem to struggle. And so I looked it up, Patrick. Since 2019, there have been 5 first-time regional hosts, and only one of them advanced to a super regional. You go back even further than that, 7 of the past 11 have not advanced to a super regional. Well, why do you think first-time regional hosts have trouble sometimes, or do you think that there may just be some irony in that?
Yeah, I think you could argue it probably both ways, but I think the simple answer is that, you know, whether you're making your first time appearance at the College World Series or hosting a regional for the first time, mm-hmm. the newness makes it challenging, right? Like, yeah. The players don't know what to expect, and they go into players, coaches, everybody, you know, it's just all of it is a new feeling and sensation, and they have to deal with all the different distractions that come with it, you know? You know, but at the same time, you know, I was in Terre Haute in 2023, and I'm guessing when you did your research,
that's the
Indiana State was the exception. Mm-hmm. And, they Mitch Hanna's their head coach at the time, who's now with South Florida. You know, he had that team prepared, and like, it's the right mindset, right? Like, they didn't let those distractions bother them. And if anything, they embraced that opportunity, and they really embraced the community as well. And you mentioned Kansas and using that basketball arena as a possibility to like get more people in. Like, that community has really embraced what the baseball team has done, like the entire athletic department, you know, because Kansas is long known as being a basketball school, right? And right now, you know, baseball's knocking at the door, and even the basketball program has been embracing the success that the baseball program's had.
Northeastern is a team that gets into the tournament quite a bit. I mean, you think about Mike Glavin's teams, and you think about pitching, you think about defense, and you think about stolen bases. I knew they were up there in stolen bases, but I was really surprised earlier this week when I looked at the actual number. 210 stolen bases, I think, out of 253 attempts for them. I mean, this is a team that really, really likes to run.
Yeah, it's almost like they're changing the rules, because I had the same reaction. You know, like, they're number one in Division I by over 30 stolen bases. I mean, the next closest team is in the 180s, and they're at 210. And you look at their stats, and they have 2 guys with over 40 stolen bases. one of which is their best hitter, Harrison Feinberg, who was the Coastal Athletic Association's Player of the Year a year ago. And I don't know where he finished this year, but I'm guessing he was pretty close to the top because 16 home runs with 42 stolen bases. I mean, that's heck of a production from one player. But you're right. It's the team up and down and the pitching, well-known. Deep bullpen, had some good starting performances in the conference tournament last year. And, I mean, after a pretty crummy start to the season, because I saw them on opening weekend, starting March 1st, they really turned things around. And they went 37-14 the rest of the way and got especially hot down the stretch.
How much do you – Northeastern, how much will they make Kansas think about throwing their number one in that game? Because that's always the temptation is to hold your number one for the second game if you're playing a four seed.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think they're going to make them consider that pretty heavily. You know, like I don't think Kansas does it because I think that's kind of like the just the success of the one seed. And, you know, Kansas has a really good number one in Dominic Vegele. And I know they want to hold him to whoever wins that Missouri State and Arkansas game because that's those Saturday night games, that's where you want to get because that's basically the stepping stone to win the regional. And to be able to win that regional, you'd much rather prefer having your top arm going that night.
Yeah, I think that 1-0 game, to me, it feels like the most pivotal game of the entire postseason. And people think that's crazy. But there's nothing like a regional weekend in terms of, like, how much pitching you have to use in such a short amount of time. You can fall into a loser's bracket in Omaha, but you got a day off where you can rest your arms. It's not like that in any other point in the postseason like it is in the regional. That 1-0 game is such a big deal. When you look at Arkansas this year, I wonder what your thoughts are about the Razorbacks.
Yeah, well, the first thing that stands out is just how they finished. And, I mean, to get those three wins against ranked opponents in the SEC tournament is so impressive. And, like, you know, I've been on this program before and I've been on other Arkansas programs before, and it feels like every year I'm picking Arkansas to win it all because you just figure at some point it's going to be their time, or at least that's how it feels. And not surprising, here we are again, right, in the same situation. They may not be hosting. You could very much argue that they probably should be hosting, which is part of the reason this Lawrence regional is so tough that Arkansas got placed there. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, it's what Dave Van Horn does, you know, like from top to bottom, that this team and just the players that they have, you know, starting with the Hunter Dietz, their starting pitcher. I don't know if there's been any more clarification about his leg injury, but even if he can't go in that first game, you know, you have to assume Gabe Gackel is going to go against Missouri State. And if so, after he threw six shutout innings, you know, at the SEC tournament, you got to feel pretty good about your chances to beat Missouri State with an arm like that. And, you know, just the number of guys that they always feel comfortable. And again, this is what Dave Van Horn does, right? Like, just when you think it's going to be player X starting a game, he turns to player Y. And then player X comes out of the bullpen for five innings and bridges the gap to another victory. But, you know, they got the best catcher in Division I baseball in Ryder Helfrich. Cam Koziel, who did it all last year at that both the regional and super regional rounds, they just have so many guys in that lineup that can beat you.
It's interesting you say that about catcher, because this is a heck of a year for catcher when you think about Vaughn Lackey at Georgia Tech and Carson Tinney at Texas. Daniel Jackson obviously having a great year at Georgia. Heck, you could even go so far as to say Chase Frelick at Auburn. Like, just in the SEC, the catcher position, Bear Harrison's having a big-time offensive year for A&M. Why do you think Helfrich is the best catcher?
Yeah, and, you know, I probably got ahead of myself because just Lackey and Jackson you just mentioned. I mean, statistically, those guys are going off. I think Helfrich, for me, is just the complete component, the whole picture of a catcher. Like, his defensive metrics, framing pitches, are just off the charts. And he steals so many strikes for that pitching staff that he just elevates everybody on that team. And, you know, you've seen him play. He's got a really strong arm. And what? He's hit something like 16 home runs this season. So he can really do it all, you know. And in comparison to someone like Lackey, who I'm not entirely sure he's going to continue to play catcher because he can play anywhere on the field. Mm-hmm. And then that Daniel Jackson might be the second 30-30 player in Division I history. If he gets just a few more stolen bases and a few more home runs, he would join JD Drew if he does accomplish that. But still, Helfrich, you know, again, you know, I mentioned Koziel and him and holdovers from that team. And those guys are always the most important to carry and bridge that success from one year to the next.
Well, I mean, even if you said Helfrich was the best, I think there may be some professional scouts who would agree with you. You look at the the draft projections right now, they're talking about he could be a top 10 to 12, 15 overall pick. So he's a big time prospect at that position. And speaking of prospects, I mean, you know, Tyler LeBlanc is a big prospect. We know who the prospects are at Arkansas. Caden Bogenpohl of Missouri State, who Razorbacks saw earlier this year when he walked him off up in Springfield. From a prospect standpoint, it feels like there's some good ones here in this regional.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, one of the top guys on Kansas, and he's not even having that great of a year, or not to his standards, is Brady Bollinger.
Yeah, so I'm last year.
Their left fielder, you know, and he's batting in the 280s somewhere, and you know, it's proof to how dangerous that team is, because it's not like Brady Bollinger is like it doesn't change how you approach him, right? Like, he's still a very dangerous batter in that lineup. And even their guy at the top of the lineup, Jordan Bach, who has the success that he's had at Southern Illinois before he arrived at Kansas. I'll put it this way. Everybody, or at least seven of the hitters in the Kansas lineup, everyday lineup, have 100 or more total bases. Mm-hmm. And it just gives you an idea, like, there are no easy outs in that lineup 1 through 9. And you're just going to have to battle through that. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, these guys are all players that are going to be playing professionally at the next level. And that's what makes Fitzgerald and his coaching staff so good, because they're able to basically scout, right? They're going to the junior college level and finding these guys and recruiting them to come to Kansas, you know, similar to how they would work, you know, high school kids. But it makes that task a little more difficult, you know, because they're not just going and trying to poach players through the portal. They're using the player development system the old fashioned way. And really turning players like Tyson LeBlanc, as we mentioned before, mm-hmm. from a JUCO transfer into a legit draft guy.
Missouri State, I know there were some people there in Springfield who thought they might ought to be a number two seed. They struggled a little bit toward the end of the year. I think it might have started the game before they came to Fayetteville in late April. And I think at one point they had lost 4 out of 10 or 11 games, or 6 out of 10, 6 out of 11, something like that. So it wasn't real clean for them there before the conference tournament. As far as being a number three seed, though, I mean, they look like a really dangerous three seed, probably one of the more dangerous ones in the country, I would think, right there with, like, Arizona State.
Absolutely. And, that, you know, I wrote up both the Lincoln and Lawrence regional previews, and that's the thing that I noticed with both of those, is that Nebraska and Kansas did not get easy draws. You know, Nebraska, the Lincoln regional is the only regional that has three ranked teams in it. And a lot of that is just because Arizona State, in my mind, got misplaced as a three seed. Mm. And you're right. I think Missouri State got misplaced as a three seed in this regional too. And Kansas draws arguably the toughest four seed in Northeastern. So, yeah. And that affects Arkansas too, obviously, because, you know, you have to play these teams. Arkansas has to play Missouri State, a team they do have a great familiarity with, but they also know how good they are and how much they can beat you. And mm-hmm. like, it's a team that's built to win with the long ball, and the pitching is good enough just to keep that offense in game. So you know, like, having this quartet of teams in Lawrence, it's really going to be interesting to see who emerges from that regional, you know, cause like, I really like Kansas, and I like the way they're constructed, and I love the way that they never give up. But at the same time, like, these are four really good teams.
Well, they got a mad Arkansas team in there, and I don't know that's. Yeah. I mean, they're mad that they didn't get a regional. They thought they should host. They thought they had earned one, and we've seen a number of Van Horn's teams. He said earlier this week, he said, we're not going to play that card. You know that. You know, we're going to show them card. But we've seen a number of his teams. They get to Omaha and they get hot and they keep going through Omaha when they start on the road. It's happened a number of times before, about half the times, I guess, since he's been at Arkansas. That's how his World Series trips have started. Is Kansas the favorite to win this regional? I don't necessarily want to ask you who you're picking to win it, but are they the favorite, or is Arkansas, being from the Power Conference and being a team that a lot of people thought was just as deserving to host?
I think it's based on your perspective, because you just brought up a good point that Arkansas is playing angry, you know, and we mentioned that 2022 Stillwater regional before. Yeah. And Oklahoma State hosted, as you know, they certainly were deserving of doing so. But even at that time, it felt like Arkansas might have been the team to beat. And it turns out that they were the ones to emerge from that regional. And I think a lot of people are feeling kind of like the same thing with this Lawrence regional. But I'll go back to it. Like, there's a reason Kansas is hosting. They're very much deserving. They won the Big 12, both the regular season and the conference tournament. You pointed out before that they did so, and they made it look fairly easily. Mm-hmm. And I think last year, when you're talking about that first-year host, from last year to this year, you know, they learned a lot. And even though the team has been turned over, they learned, you know, that they were pretty gassed when they got to this time of year. I think they've made the necessary adjustments to stay crisp, you know, and a lot of that has to do in between the ears, you know, like their mental conviction and just their emotions as well, keeping those in check. And I think that's what makes this team so special. They never feel like they're out of it. They've won so many games from behind fashion. And most recently now they've started to show that they can just pull away because they are a superior team.
Patrick, you know, when Arkansas and Missouri State are together at a regional, you can never expect what's going to happen. All you can expect is craziness. You mentioned 2022, you know, 2017, they were in Fayetteville together and they had a game go till 3:10 in the morning in a rainstorm. So I have a feeling that we're in for some craziness this weekend in Lawrence.
Yeah, and I would agree 100%. That's kind of like the vibe I had when I wrote the regional. I hope the weather part, you know, like I never like mentioning the weather, and
yeah.
I'm not even going to check my weather app to see like what it's supposed to be like.
Yeah,
because no one wants to be there at 3 a.m. watching rainfall. So
well, it's May in Kansas and early June in Kansas. I can tell you without having to check the weather app what the radar probably is going to look like. But that's just kind of how it works this time of year. Patrick, looking forward to seeing you up there. Have safe travels.
Yeah, thanks. See you there.
All right, Patrick Ebert from D1 Baseball. We appreciate you being with us. We'll see you again on our next show. Hope that we see you at our website, wholehogsports.com. Until then, have a great day, everybody.